Welcome to Yo 11 Minutes. Yo 11 Minutes, mostly Vegas, no BS casino experience and more. Today's episode, The Tragic Death of a True Baccarat King, Tommy Renzoni. This is episode 47, season 2. Michael Traeger is a casino and travel loyalty expert who also helps people turn their travel dreams into reality. And now, your host, Michael Traeger. How's it going, Michael?
It's going great. How are you doing today?
Doing quite well. It's interesting. Events happened shortly before we started our program today. There was a lot of buzz going on about it while I was at work, but that's going to be our news story.
That's cool. I'm excited. I love a lot of buzz, especially new buzz, timely buzz. So why do we get on it? And then I finally have the tragic death story of our favorite Baccarat hero.
Very close to being a tragic death today, but let's just get into it. And now okay. It's time for the news and views. An online content creator has been taken into custody after he climbed to the top of the Las Vegas Sphere to raise money for a homeless pregnant woman on Wednesday. Mason Nischamps was detained by the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department earlier today after climbing Sphere Las Vegas. The self-proclaimed skyscraper climber was seen standing on top of the structure in jaw-dropping images. Nischamps took to his Facebook to post a video of him on the dome, where he was seen wearing a white hoodie, sunglasses, and a camera on top of his head. The native Las Vegan said he climbed the structure to raise money for a mother named Isabel, who is homeless and pregnant and needs help, end quote. Mason Nischamps climbed Las Vegas Sphere with a camera mounted on his head and was immediately detained by police after his stunt. He has previously climbed the Aria Hotel and Casino in protest of Nevada's COVID-19 health orders, as well as the 51-story Salesforce building in downtown San Francisco, amongst other structures. And that's going to do it for the news. And now for the views. Michael, what are your thoughts?
I didn't realize you could climb a sphere.
Me either.
That was the first thing.
Yeah, I was like, you can climb a sphere? That was the first thing I thought. Because it's got to start off kind of awkward, right? Because you're like, you know, underneath it practically. And then you have to, yeah, I mean, he's done things like this before, but spheres.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, do they have to get on top of the sphere to fix like LEDs and things like that? Or is that on the inside?
Well, as I understand it, the way they had him get back down was from the top. And I guess there's a way to get up there and he had to climb down, I guess, that service area or whatever it is, that staff or project, whatever the maintenance people use to get up there. And as soon as he got down, he was immediately arrested. So there's
that. That's crazy. I don't think we have fear of too many people doing this successfully.
I mean, I've seen videos of people who are, you know, posing for that great Instagram shot in vicarious situations right before they died from falling to their tragic death. So at least he didn't get hurt or anything. A sphere. Who knew you could climb a sphere?
That was my first thought. But wow, what a crazy news story and so timely, because you said that was just today, right?
Just today. It was right before I left work today. They had just apprehended him and I was like, and that's today's story. Because I'm not sure it's going to get covered in, you know, many other places because it's more of a local story. But yeah, in case people have folks at home, you know, their news isn't covering that. Here's one of the things that happened.
What is he charged with? Trespassing? Or is it like Section 4, Paragraph 8, spear climbing in Las Vegas?
Yes, it is.
Section 4.
Paragraph 8, spear climbing. Exactly that.
I'm not sure what
they're going to charge him with. I'm sure there's some form of trespassing and maybe endangerment or something like that. I don't know what they're going to throw on him. It's the charges and all that are still developing, but that's what's going on.
Crazy, crazy. Well, we have another interesting story as part of our history moment this week.
That's right. We have a history moment, which we haven't had in a while. So happy to get to use this intro. But by the way, the guy's name is Maison des Champs, And I was going to look up our favorite guy on YouTube for the correct pronunciation of that, but I didn't have enough time.
Deschamps.
Maison des Champs.
You should have told me. You know I love to look those. You know I love to look those things up.
Maison des Champs.
Maison
des Champs.
I don't know. Now his name is Maison. That means like house, right? I don't know.
Okay. I have
anyway,
no idea.
Let's carry on because people have things to do.
Yes.
And they're just super, super curious about the tragic death.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And now it's time for a history moment, the tragic death of a true Baccarat king, Tommy Renzoni.
Greetings, ladies and gents, and now it is time for a Las Vegas history moment. A moment of Las Vegas's history. Brought to you by Travels Orc.
Okay, well, as we have talked about before, there was this very famous guy, Tommy. Actually, his real name was Francis Tommy Renzoni, who brought Baccarat to Las Vegas. And to remind you, in November 1959, arrangements were made with the Sands Hotel, whereby the casino would provide a roped-off area for a new table game. The casino would bankroll the game and a share of its profits. Thus, Tommy Renzoni introduced Cuban Baccarat to America. The game immediately took on the label American Baccarat. And that was the game where they lost. It was claimed that they lost $250,000, I think we read. But the person in this book I was reading said it was actually $140,000, and a larger figure was publicized, and the amount varies in the books by a number of people, but he checked it with the owners. So this was Lyle Stewart because he was in the know. And it is a really interesting story. And what we learn about Tommy is that a lot of his income came from the skim. And one of the other interesting lines that they talk about is every Baccarat game in town should have a small statue of Francis Tommy Renzoni. He not only introduced the game to America, but was himself a, exact words, Baccarat degenerate. He lost his personal fortune after fortune playing the very game that he introduced and supervised. Got to wonder about that. Remember, Steve Wynn used to say the best way to win in a casino was to own a casino. But obviously, Tommy took it that other thing. You know, he brought the game to town, he supervised the game, and he also loved playing the game. But his money was quite plentiful because in those days there was a really large skim that was divided between the owners and managers. And that was basically money not reported to tax authorities or anyone else. And that was divided up amongst the owners. So, you know, he had a lot of extra money, which he used to play for Baccarat. And, you know, a lot of people would maybe put that money away or do something else with it, but not Tommy. To Tommy, money was for gambling. He would receive his $30,000 or $40,000 chunk of the skim in cash. I don't know how often that was. And then he'd taxi to nearby Caesar's Palace, where the game had just opened, and play until he was tapioca. And if you ever heard that term, toots shore, it's a quaint way of saying that you are tapped out or broke. Tapioca. And on one occasion, is that another great story, when he was ahead $42,000, he had a mild heart attack at the table. He was rushed by a siren-screeching ambulance to Sunrise Hospital. That evening, without warning from a physician or a physician's okay, he dressed himself and taxied back to Caesar's Palace. There he promptly dropped the $42,000 he'd won, plus his original $30,000 stake. He would say, "I'm sick in the head," Tommy would tell people again and again. "I'm just plain sick in the head." And that probably is something that's relatively true for somebody who would basically get out of the hospital and go right back to the gambling tables. So he, when things started to change in Vegas, and the biggest change was that Howard Hughes bought the Sands Hotel and the skimming stopped. And at that point, Tommy was forced to live on his salary and share of the tokes, which are tips. And he couldn't just quite adjust. And he quit, and he later tried to introduce another game called Bar Booth at Circus Circus, which never happened. That'd be an interesting thing to talk about. It's another very strange game. And it just was really hard for him because his income was not the way his income was before, especially with the amount that he liked to gamble. So at one point when Tommy's wife died of cancer, he lost the will to live. There was income from somewhere, and from time to time he played a little baccarat, but he was listless. Sometimes he wouldn't answer his home phone for days at a time. And then one evening he played a few hands of baccarat at the Tropicana, but even that game no longer held interest for him. When he stood up to leave, the dealer had reminded him that he had forgotten to pick up 6 black $100 chips. He grunted acknowledgement. He walked outside and stepped in front of a speeding car. He was killed instantly. They found the 6 black Tropicana chips in his pocket. He hadn't bothered to stop at the cashier's cage to cash them. And this book went on to talk about how many of the young crew worked with Tommy at the Sands are now supervising baccarat games throughout Nevada. This is quite a few years ago. But it is, it's really a sad story. You know, Tommy died broke, but the game he carried from Havana to Las Vegas has earned hundreds of millions of dollars and will earn billions more before the last baccarat shoe is dealt. Like I said, there ought to be a statue somewhere in Las Vegas for Bugsy Siegel, and every baccarat pit should feature a plaque to honor Francis Tommy Renzoni. So that's it. That's the story of, you know, the tragic death, which we were trying to look up, but I was able to find in one of my books by Lyle Stewart, who is an authority on this stuff, and I have very good reason to believe it's pretty accurate because he was an accurate kind of guy.
An interesting story indeed. I mean, there's a plaque of Bugsy Siegel at Flamingo,
right
side in the back, the little thingy where his penthouse was at some point or whatever. But yeah, so I mean, I don't think it would be difficult for there'd be at least just like a little G.I. Joe figured statue of the man. You know what I'm saying? Just a little something.
I think so. Well, I mean, I guess the point is that, you know, when you look at all these numbers, remember when we look at these Vegas numbers and they look how much money baccarat made. Look at how successful baccarat has been. And over the years, it's been successful in bringing in high rollers from the Middle East and from Asia. And it's also has quite a bit to do with the bottom line, like during F1. Baccarat had a lot to do with the success at Wynn Las Vegas, you know, their casino success and also success. So you do sort of think that this guy was, you know, this was the game he was doing, you know, dealing and supervising in, you know, Havana. And, you know, then Fidel Castro shut down all those casinos and he brought it to the United States and convinced them at the Sands to, you know, to give it a shot. And they did. And look where we are today. So one of the most obviously, I wouldn't necessarily say the most popular casino games, though it is pretty popular. But I would definitely say probably the single most profitable casino table game for casinos properties. And I think I would go out on a limb to say that. So that's sort of interesting to think about. And that's where you have it. And it's sort of sad. Also, it does bring up that point. You know, we're talking here, you know, 1970s, you know, 1970s, 30,000, 40,000 and skim. That's like some major money. And also the fact that he would take $30,000 and go gamble. Like to me today, even the idea of going with $30,000 to play baccarat seems like a lot of money. That was a hell of a lot of money in 1971, right?
Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, interesting story. So yeah, now we know for sure. That's a sad story, though. I mean, wow. All the money in the world just didn't make him happy anymore.
The money didn't. And actually, the biggest difference there is the gambling didn't make him happy anymore. Because remember, he was more into it for the action than he was for winning or losing. But when his wife passed away, it just was really, I think that was like the final thing between losing, you know, his money from the skim and his really strong income. And then his wife passing away, he just didn't, you know, he didn't have a will to live anymore. Really, yeah, sort of tragic and, yeah, super sad.
It's kind of like he didn't have anyone to share it with. Kind of like that guy in Vegas Vacation, that old man in the Kino.
Kino.
Yeah. And he says, if I celebrate, if I win, I can't tell anyone about it. I can't share it with anyone or whatever. So maybe it's something like that. What a somber episode. Well, that being said, do you have any closing remarks or anything?
No, nothing. We should just be more positive. Tomorrow, we're going to try to end the week with just talking a little bit about the Super Bowl, even though football isn't one of my favorite things in the world. And I don't think it's actually one of Movestro's favorite things in the world either. We just feel with the Super Bowl in Las Vegas on Sunday, if you haven't heard, that we need to talk about it a little bit, you know, so we'll try to find some interesting angles there.
All right. And that's going to do it for this episode. Luxury travel booking, Travel Zork Travel. Visit us at TravelZorkTravel.com to plan your next amazing vacation. And please join the conversation on social media. You can find us easily as all social platforms are at Travel Zork. We'll see you next time.